and faculty at UW-Parkside, Karen Sconsert, an associate professor of education at Carthage College, Jess Sheeler, an outreach and career transition specialist at Job Corps, Steve Brown, assistant professor of educational leadership at UW-Oshkosh, and former Kenosha Unified School Superintendent Joe Mangi. Now, here's today's Education Matters moderator.
And a very pleasant good morning and welcome to this edition of Education Matters here on WGTD HD. I'm your host this morning, Steve Brown. And we have a bit of a different program today. It's going to deal with education in some different ways. And I'm very pleased that I'll be talking with Courtney Kotlowski and Natalie Sorrentino. And if you hear strange noises during the interview, it's probably Jake, the dog, who might be barking. But it just adds to the whole environment.
I mean, it could be a ghost. We don't know. But it's probably Jake.
And that was Courtney. But anyway, let me start by saying, a child who may go blind, a big sister who is a light catcher for her brother with special needs, an actor who loves to speak in puns, a boy from the Philippines who started the Happy Animals Club. These are a few of the stories in the Nat and Corky series, and that's Nat, G-N-A-T, and Corky series, that celebrates the spirit of children, all colors, all creeds, all abilities, in one collection that shows us just how alike we are and how much our differences unite us. Before we get into the interview, let me give a bit of background. With Courtney, she's an award-winning writer, playwright, and published author. She's one of the founders of the Serendipity Theater, which is now Second Story in Chicago. Her plays have been performed in major cities across the country, including at the New York Fringe Festival, the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater, Straw Dog Theater, the Second City in L.A., and the Victory Gardens Theater. And also in this interview, Natalie Sorrentino. She was given her first watercolor set from her godfather, Jack, at the age of 3, and she hasn't separated from her medium ever since. In 2004, Natalie graduated from Alverno College with a degree in art therapy, and over the years, she has been fortunate to experience different environments with a variety of populations. She wholeheartedly believes that every individual is their own narrator, eagerly waiting to weave their personal tale. As we begin the interview, first of all, I want to talk with you, Courtney, about your career as a writer and how you evolved from writing stage plays. Maybe if you could just start off with how you got involved in writing, and then I'll be asking the same question to you, Natalie, about your involvement, how you started in the world of the arts.
It starts at a very young age with just loving books. I used to memorize Shel Silverstein, all of his stuff. He's one of my favorite writers of all time. But it started there and was really an evolution of, I don't know, being alive and being a creative soul. So I actually spent a lot of time in the theater. I had a friend that dragged me to an audition in high school, dragged me out of the locker room from a volleyball game to the auditorium in the theater where they were waiting for me to audition. She had signed me up without me knowing. So I auditioned and prayed to God that I did not get in the play, but I did. And that play was Stage Door, and I played Mona Monroe. But from there started a love of just art. I was on the high school newspaper and did theater. So a lot of words, a lot of theater, a lot of art, a lot of influences, and ended up studying creative writing and theater at Miami University.
You mentioned Shel Silverstein, but I saw somewhere that as a child, you just had a lot of the poems and things memorized. If you could read this particular very short poem by Mr. Silverstein.
Colors by Shel Silverstein. My skin is kind of sort of brownish, pinkish, yellowish, white. My eyes are grayish, bluish, green, but I'm told they look orange in the night. My hair is reddish, blondish, brown, but it's silver when it's wet. And all the colors I am inside have not been invented yet.
As we turn over here to Natalie, as you look at that story, okay, at that poem about colors, what kinds of visuals come into your mind as an artist?
Oh, color. Just, you know, I speak in color. And yeah, I see it swirling. I see it, you know, twirling. It's just movement and light.
Occasionally during this interview, I'll be tying things back into education since this is for Education Matters. But A number of the stories that you've written, Courtney, are talking about all kinds of topics and issues. And the lead-in that I had, a child who may go blind, and we'll talk a bit about that in the book Edison the Light Catcher. So we'll talk a bit about how that story came about. A big sister who is a light catcher for her brother who has special needs. A boy from the Philippines who started a happy animals club. What kinds of things do you draw upon when you decide that you're going to start a new book, because the fourth book is coming out, and the other books, I've only read Addison. I've read reviews of the other. How do you get into the mode? How do you get into the routine, if you will, of being a writer, and maybe just draw upon your own education, particularly whether it was at Antioch High School or when you were in junior high or elementary school? What kinds of things then and now are similar in terms of how you get into that modality of writing?
That's a great question. Going back to education, I think for me, there was really strong teachers and influences in my life who gave me the skills I needed, but also the support I needed to be confident enough to just begin. One of those people is Michael Gordy, who is still at the high school. He's a football coach, but also like a poet who loves English and the English language. And he was the head of the newspaper at the high school. So he was the person I would sit down with. I had a column called Not So Deep Thoughts. I would sit with Mr. Gordy, and you remember those pens like in the early 90s that had a blue side and a red side and you could flip it? He would flip it to red and then just begin, you know, editing right there next to me. And at first, you know, the first go around, I was like, oh my goodness, I really stink. Like, this is not great. But it wasn't that. It was the art of learning to take away what's not neat. Editing, right? That's what a large part of writing is shoveling all those words up onto the shore and just getting ready to make a sandcastle. And a great quote that I've read before is, you know, it's, writing is like making a sandcastle. You get all the sand up on the shore, and then when it's time, you take it away, right? You put all the shells, make it beautiful. That's the editing part. So he was the first person in my life that really taught me how to take an edit, how to listen and not be emotional about the edit, but, you know, logical about the edit, that, you know, less is more. And, you know, I think it was Mark Twain said, I would have written a shorter letter, but I ran out of time. So he really stripped everything away and got to what the story was. So when it comes to this series, I know you had asked, you know, where do you get your inspiration or how do you begin writing? And it comes from storytelling from these kids. So, you know, children can, it starts with children going to our website at natandcorky.com. And it's a series of questions they can fill out. And really, it's difficult choosing which kids to interview. But from there, we kind of pick out the sweet little nuggets that are inside there. And the story comes from the child. I always, you know, start with not trying to put the story on them or what I think it might be about, but really having time with them and listening to what they have to say. And then absorbing all of that information and deciphering what the metaphor is that can universally speak to the audience and people we're trying to reach with this series.
Let me ask you, Natalie, those questions that are on the Nat and Corky website, there are like 15 or 20 questions. How has this creative partnership that you have with Courtney, maybe if you can, in your own words, sort of describe how it actually happened? There had to be some sort of creative spark there.
Well, it all started in the basement of corporate America, ironically. I still don't know how I ended up there, to be quite honest, you know, being an art therapist for over a decade and then finding myself in the basement of corporate America was still a little bit of a shock.
By the way, when you talk about an art therapist, maybe if you can just talk briefly about exactly what that is. I know I've heard the phrase, the term a lot, and I know very little about it. So for me and any of the audience members listening.
Yeah. I like to say it's using art as a tool to further communication is really what it is. It's a way to open up a room and to get people expressing themselves in the non-conventional way. So, yeah, that's the way I kind of summarize it best.
And a few of the questions that are on the website, what is the most beautiful thing you've ever seen? If you had a superpower, what would it be? And then there are other kinds of questions. What is the scariest thing that's ever happened to you, Natalie?
I think sometimes, you know, if I were to summarize it really in a more broad way, is just watching your kids, you know, your little hearts that are outside of your chest, leave every day and just, you know, trusting that the world will take care of them. I think that really, if I were to say, you know, it's my best blessing, but it's also like a big fear of, you know, will they be okay? Will all the little things that we've instilled in them every day present themselves in the way that they need to? So,
You were talking before we started taping about your daughter, Milena. And you said she's just entering sixth grade at a school in the Wisconsin area. Explain to me, because school just started, because we're taping this a week or so before it's going to broadcast. School has just started in Wisconsin and started this past week, I believe, in Illinois. How were her first days or her first day itself?
Wonderful when she returned home. But the anticipation of the unknown really got the better of her, which is so unlike her little character. She's just this ball of energy and light and confidence that amazes me every day. But she was a little shook by all, you know, change. A lot of change for her this year. So leaving the door was very different than her, you know, returning home. So right now, she couldn't love it more. So we feel at peace. Yeah, she gets to explore all the arts, which is so new for, you know, it was there, but now it's like different tiers and levels of all the things she can do and hundreds of new faces. So,
Courtney, you read that one poem by Shel Silverstein and this other one, The Voice. And by the way, I read somewhere that and you sort of alluded to it, that when you were like three or four, when you were very young, I don't know how old you were exactly, that you had a lot of these poems memorized. As a parent, as a writer, as a creative type, what was it with his poems that really drew them to you?
I think one of the main things is it speaks universally. You don't need to be five. You could be any age and read his stuff, and it resonates on a level. And it's funny because people will ask, you know, how do you write for children? I mean, I did a workshop and the title was Writing for Children. And, you know, I started the session. I was like, all right, get out your notepads, everybody. This is the $1 million answer to this name of this session. And the way you write for children is you don't. You write for people, really. You know, that's what ties us all together is stories. And I think one thing that he does that spoke to me and still speaks to me is just cut out all the crap. And cut to the chase of simplicity and using just the most beautiful words. And the rhythm in his writing is, I mean, you can feel it. You know it's him when you read it. And he's funny, but also really there's some sadness in there. There's all the feelings. For me, I mean, so I did memorize all his stuff. And then show and tell throughout my career as a grade schooler was all just Shel Silverstein poems. I'd be like, okay, thanks, Mrs. Lichnowsky. I will take the floor. And here we go. Colors by Shel Silverstein. I was like, here she goes again.
Right. Or The Voice. Or The Voice.
The Voice. You want me to read it?
Yeah.
Sure. I should have this memorized. The Voice by Shel Silverstein. There is a voice inside of you that whispers all day long. I feel this is right for me. I know that this is wrong. No teacher, preacher, parent, friend, or wise men can decide what's right for you. Just listen to the voice that speaks inside. Beautiful.
That voice inside. Let's talk about your first book, Addison the Light Catcher, and maybe talk about it from how the story came about. And then, Natalie, I'll ask you to talk about some of the incredible illustrations in the book. I've read the book. And obviously this is radio, and if any of our audience members want to get the book, we'll talk about how they can do that later. But anyway, how did this story come about?
That's a good question. There was a photo that was circulating of a young boy with Down syndrome that literally was the cutest, most full of light and joy and love and life photo that I've ever seen. It was the sweetest thing. And so I reached out to his mom. And was like, hey, We'd love to do a story on you and your family and see, you know, what comes of it. And really what ended up happening was we ventured into the idea of what it's like to be a sibling to someone with special needs. And the story evolved from there. So in developing this story, I mean, I, just like Natalie does, sit with the subject matter for a long time and read about siblings and special needs and Down syndrome and that whole community. It came to me on Veterans Day, really at like 3 o'clock in the morning. I woke up and wrote this story in about 10 minutes, but it took a while to get there because the story is not about Down syndrome. It's not about special needs. It's about that universal message of sharing your light and seeking it out in others. So the metaphor of it just became this very simple story of, hey, you have a light, so does everyone else. What if we all in the world decided that we would share and live our purpose, but in doing so, we would also seek it out from others so that everyone is bringing the best out in the world and each other. And that's where it landed, you know, and then I send it over to Natalie after like 57 revisions, cause I'll usually send it over and go, okay, this is final. And then I'll go, wait, no, it's not final. Wait, here comes, this is final. And then I'm like, this is final.
Yeah. Okay. And that's a great lead. And Natalie and I have the book in front of me, but before I ask Courtney to read the story or part of the story, when she was sending you all of these all these final versions, if you will, how did you go about starting to put together in your mind first, or maybe to talk about the process about reading the story and then deciding what came into your mind as far as the illustrations?
Well, it's funny you ask that because I don't open anything until I know it's the final, final, final.
Okay, so every time Courtney would send you something, you sort of knew or maybe you sort of anticipated that this was not going to be the final.
Exactly. I've learned after working with sweet Courtney after time, I hold off for a minute because it'll come and it'll come and then it'll really. And then all of a sudden, okay, hold on, wait, that wasn't it. And then when it says final, 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 then I open it up. And then once it's open, I read it. I usually cry because her words get me every single time. They have a way of just penetrating the noise and just getting right to the soul. So I get nervous because I am like, oh no, now how do I bring this to life? How do I bring these beautiful words, you know, into a visual place and space? So I sit for a very long time. I'm more introverted, so I'm very internal. I analyze everything. So I begin there. And then I start kind of grabbing images from all over and just, you know, Pinterest is a really big visual board for me. Start gathering just things that speak to her words, but even more kind of like she was saying, the spirit of these children who we're honoring. And then I start the drawing process, which is painful for me.
Now, when you say painful, maybe if you can elaborate, when you say it's painful, and as far as the process and everything else.
Well, similar to the poem we just read about that intuitive sense and place and space, drawing is more technically challenging for me. So I struggle with it. And the type of drawing I do, the details are so small, and if it's just off enough, it's not right. So it's this, but it is very detail oriented, and it's just a lot of work. So a lot of erasing, a lot of just right. If the eyelash is too thick, there it goes. You know, just a lot of the details.
As I look at the cover of the book, the title "Addison, the Light Catcher," maybe if you just describe exactly what someone would see. And describe it through your eyes as the illustrator, as if someone is listening to you right now. In your own way, just describe the cover.
Well, the little characters are quirky. They have very long limbs, exaggerated. So, and the eyes as well are exaggerated. The color of the skin is almost colorless in a way. I mean, it's such a mix of color, but the intent behind that is that it could be anyone, really, right? The soul, speaking to the soul and the soul shine, it's just movement and light and I don't even know. It's almost like sound in a way, swirling. The arms are often raised up almost to honor that soul and that light from above. There's a lot of, it's funny, I was listening to Courtney describe Shel Silverstein. And when I was 3 or 4, my father was a writer, so my home was always filled with books too. He was one of my favorites, but I would go to the illustrations. And the illustrations, because they were a lot of line drawing and open space. And you'll see throughout my work, I love the open place and space, because for me as a child, it left room for me to imagine what else was there without it being told. So a lot of my work will have color and whimsy and quirk, but also a lot of white space for you to continue on your own.
In that process, after you read that final version that Courtney has sent you, and maybe you've peeked at some of it, and that's possible. And then you start your illustrations of the characters and everything. What would cause you to say, you know, I'm looking at the cover of this book now, Addison, the Light Catcher, and let's say the young lady who's standing there holding, a cup of some sort, or her light catcher, sorry. And but what would cause you to say, you know, I don't like that, I want to change it? And that, I mean, what kinds of thought processes do you go through as an illustrator, as an artist?
Well, these particular characters, if you will, and the way they look was an art therapy process for me in of itself. When I was an art therapist and I was in study at school, my work was very realistic. So to transition to this whimsy and this quirk and this look really took years and years, and kind of stripping away everything I was academically taught, and to start letting go. Therein lies the therapy for me. So these little characters, which you can see with all of our books, very similar features, it's because of how long it took me to get to this place in space. It's an intuitive sense if something is off. That's the only way I can really describe it. It doesn't feel right. It doesn't quite sit right. The fingers just don't align to what I'm feeling on the inside. It's really hard to bring to words, because it is truly I'm listening to my soul, my spirit. It's an intuitive response. So that's where I love the painting over the drawing, because I don't think so much. It's just this, you know, natural, intuitive thing.
One of the things with the story Addison, the Light Catcher, that we'll talk about, we're talking about children with special needs. And as an educator myself, as someone who has been a classroom teacher or principal, but in education, dealing with children with special needs is so important. What was that magnet for you?
Yeah, I think for us, for Nat and Corky in general, the whole spirit of the series is celebrating all people. So often you'll see a book series that just focuses on, you know, special needs kids. With this series and with us, Nat and Corky, what we're really trying to do is show people of all ages that everyone's included, that your story matters. And the quirk and the joy of it is that when you're reading these stories, we hope they are universal enough that everybody can attach themselves in some way to that message, right? Whether it's about the light inside people, whether it's about being an advocate for animals, whether it's about, you know, living bravely through adversity, we can all see and hear ourselves in these stories. So truly, the collection, the hope is that within that collection, everybody has a place. Everybody can, you know, or look to someone. It's like, that's my hero. So cute. When we first launched Addison the Light Catcher, little girls were coming with flowers in their hair. Like, she has that little crown of flowers on her head. And it was really neat to see, because you're starting to, the hope is that people will think of these kids and these people as heroes. And they're not famous. And we'll say that when we go into classrooms, you know, guess what? You don't have to be famous to be awesome. It's already there inside of you. And guess what? You don't have to be anybody else, because they're already taken. So be you. That's good enough. Start there and find what's inside you that the world needs. So long story short, everybody's in. Everybody's included. It's about kindness and empathy, right? The only way you can get closer to people and their struggle and their life is from an empathetic view. In life, it's like, holy cow, I had no idea until this happened to me how horrible this is or how wonderful it is. But the idea of spreading that awareness, empathy, and understanding of what it's like to be somebody else.
We're just more alike than we are not. So, you know, when, like you were saying, when those books, you know, about a particular topic come out, as lovely as they are, it kind of furthers the gap and widens the gap, as opposed to what unites us, which at the soul is a lot of similar things.
Before I ask you, Courtney, to read a portion of Addison, The Light Catcher, this is just a quick summary, and I think this was on one of the websites. Addison, The Light Catcher is the first book in the Nat and Corky series. It sheds light on love, advocacy, and the powerful bond of siblings. Addison tells the story of her fictional super-duper light catcher she made when her special needs brother, Asher, was born to catch his light and share it with the world. So if you could just read from the beginning.
Did you know there is light inside of everyone? There is. And did you know you can catch it and share it with the world? You can. This is my super duper light catcher. It's fast, dependable, and sparkly. I made it when my brother was born because when he opened his eyes, the light was jumping around everywhere. At first, it hit me right in the eye and bounced off the nursery wall out into the hallway. I told it to stop, but the light just kept running. I chased it around the house, through the laundry room, across the living room, past the kitchen, and out the front door. It stood by the mailbox, and I tried to plead with it. Please, light, let me catch you. I'll put you up in the sky for all the world to see. But the light just kept on running through the garden, out past the barn, and into the woods until finally we both had to stop because we could hardly breathe. Please, light, listen to me. I'll take care of you and put you in a place where all the world can see how beautiful and special you are to me. The light blinked and moved from side to side, trying to decide if it trusted me. I realized it was afraid of what the world might think. I moved closer and gently held out my hand. The world needs your light, and I can help you shine. I cupped my hands together and invited the light in. Then slowly, with a trusting sigh, the light surrendered and poured into my hands. That's when I made my wish. I wish I may, I wish I might be forever the keeper of my brother's light. I stretched my arm back as far as it could go and tossed the light up towards the stars with all my might. The light looked down, smiling and beautiful from its place in the sky. It twinkled and sparkled and danced in my eyes. There it stands, night after night and day after day, the brightest light I've ever been lucky enough to catch. My brothers. And then at the back, there's a bio of the two kids. So it says, meet Addison and Asher. The world is a better place because of big sisters like Addison. She is her brother Asher's biggest advocate, best friend, and a bright light for all children with Down syndrome and special needs. At the young age of 8, Addison understands what is most important, love, acceptance, and happiness. If you live your life like Addison, you can add magic to the world in ways you've never imagined.
If you're just joining us on Education Matters today, I'm speaking with Courtney Kotlowski and Natalie Sorrentino, and we're talking about their book series. There will be eventually 16 books, and this is the Nat and Corky series. When you have read this to a group of young children, what are their reactions, and what types of questions or comments have they made?
They clap first. There's a lot of awe, right? And it's unbelievable. You know, we always say kids have such big, deep emotions that I think sometimes we overlook. And even Courtney and I in this world sometimes forget, because when we ask them, so what was that about? What did you think about that? They have some of the most profound responses that are just absolutely on point and deep. And, you know, you're right. We all have a light inside of us. We have to honor that light. We have to shine bright. And, you know, they'll talk about how at times things in life can dim our lights. And, you know, Courtney and I are always a puddle on stage because absolutely, you know, and it's so true and it's so deep and they get it. And that's why I think, you know, the way Courtney writes too, like she said, it could be for any age because that message rings true at any point in time in our life, right? But they get it. And I think that's what makes them just fall in love with it even more.
One of the greatest things about this journey has been going to different schools, reading to children, and then them teaching us. Like every time we walk away, there's a deeper, you know, resonance with this. And it's been a wild journey, but a beautiful one to hear how it affects people. At our first launch, at this book launch, a mother came with her son who has Down syndrome, and he was on her hip, so he was probably like 18 months old, a little guy. And everybody let her cut the line. So she came up front and, you know, she had tears in her eyes and said, thank you for creating something that represents my child among with everyone else, not separating him out, but this story that's, you know.
You're saying that she has two older daughters, and she said, for the first time, it's a book that I will buy and they will be proud to read about their brother. And we were all crying at that moment. So she started crying because that's what we hope. That's the hope. So
maybe if you could talk about Will Hitt. And it's an interesting book. It's about a very lesser known disease, mm-hmm. and the impact that it had on this particular young man. First, how did this story come about? Maybe give some of the lead up to it, and then maybe just talk about Will.
This series, you know, kids can go online to natandcorky.com, and there's a series of questions there. And Will went online and filled out our questionnaire. Mm-hmm. And when those responses came back, it was some the most funny and profound and just quick-witted answers. And interestingly enough, Will lives here in Antioch. I know his mother. She was on the swim team with me. But his mother was on swim team with me, and our relay team was called the Sea Cucumbers. We have known each other. And so his answers came in. I was like, this is really funny stuff. And I knew there was something like he had some sort of syndrome or disease, but wasn't exactly sure. So called his mother up and said, hey, your son just filled out our questionnaire and it's the funniest responses and really profound. Would love to interview him, get to know him a little bit more deeply. So they, you know, agreed to an interview, which is how our process begins. Mm-hmm. But one of the most profound things in his response to our question, I think one of the questions is, why was the earth made? Mm-hmm. And his response was, so we could live on it. And it sounds really simple, but if you just took that lesson and lived your life, your purpose, what a different world we would have. So a lot of his responses were awesome. So we had an interview, and, you know, he had written down in his questionnaire that he'd love to meet Arnold Schwarzenegger, that his family has an awesome pot pie recipe. You know, he was going to challenge Michael Jordan to a slam dunk face off, all these awesome, like, yeah, that's awesome. So when I interviewed him, he just expounded on that. You know, Marilyn Monroe is the most beautiful person in the world. So we were almost done with the interview. And I said, is there anything else you'd like to, you know, talk about? And he said, well, you know, I'm going blind. And I said, you know, your mother had mentioned to me that you have a syndrome. Do you want to talk about that? He's like, no, I'm learning to walk with a cane and I'm learning Braille. And, you know, I love my family and friends. They help me see in the dark. So this whole interview talking to this kid, and if you were just anybody, you would never know or think he was facing blindness, learning Braille, going to walk with a cane right before high school, like all these unbelievably daunting things. But his spirit and attitude were like, whatever, I'm still going to live my life. I'm still going to jam out. I'm going to rock this thing. And he does. So the story, like I said, it comes from the kid. And again, it's not a story about blindness. Will It is a story about, for all of us, like, you know, what's the worst thing that happened? You want to write that book? You want to illustrate? You want to be a TV, radio? What is the worst thing that could happen? You know, and ultimately the worst thing that could happen is that it's too late, that you wasted all that time standing on the edge of something awesome and you never jumped. And that's the message.
Has Will read the book?
Yeah. So the book is available in Braille. We had this book launch at his high school, which was awesome. It was like the worst snowstorm, like one of the worst 57 we had this past winter, but it was pretty bad. It was an ice storm, but there were hundreds of people there, and he was right in the middle of us signing books. He's read the book. Do we want to talk about Lions Camp that we just went up to?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
We were asked to speak at the Bardet Beetle Camp. Is that just what they call it? At Lions Camp? Right. And it was their first year that they had ever held this. And so it was such an honor to be asked to go. And it was from, it was children from all around the world. I mean, there were individuals from Puerto Rico there, Canada. And we, Will's family, his mother couldn't make it, but Will and his dad were there, and we were able to just spend the day and dinner and speak to this group of individuals, that all have the Bardet Beetle syndrome. Mm-hmm. And yeah, Will was right there with us, speaking on his book, signing it. And it was just one of the most beautiful experiences to all be together and to see this man, doing this work, you know, for these individuals.
Dr. Haas, so Bardet Beetle syndrome, I think there's like there's only 3,000 cases in the U.S.
The children who were there didn't think anybody else in the world was like them. So to come together in one space was, for them, life-changing.
Wisconsin, the only clinic that focuses on this syndrome, is in Marshfield, Wisconsin. Dr. Haas has done incredible work. So these families from all over the world will come for treatment there, because along with blindness, there's a number of complications that present themselves. And, you know, instead of the one-off, I'm going to go to this doctor and this doctor, nobody's talking to each other. This man puts it all together for families and gives them, you know, a regimen, a program, a comprehensive solution for this really problematic syndrome. So it was amazing to be in the room with all those families and people. It was amazing to read the story, and Will was there, you know, with us. But one thing in particular for me, like, there's not anything that Natalie and I go to with this series that we don't end up crying. Yeah. Like, all we do is end up crying, laughing, crying,
laughing. Crying, laughing, laughing, crying, getting lost.
There was one little girl who got up with her grandmother, and she was wheelchair bound, and read a story that was probably about a minute and a half.
Her grandmother read the story on her behalf.
And, you know, and then they wheeled away, and I had a little chat with the grandmother. So that was lovely, you know. And she said it took her 3 months to write that. 3 months to write a minute and a half, a radio spot. And that just hit me like, you know what? Holy cow, because she can't see the word, like just typing. Everything is perspective. And it certainly, you know, puts a new perspective on writing and what people have to face to just try to get something done, to put something out there in the world. It's so it was pretty remarkable.
It seems like the books that you've written, from Elena with Love and Ken the Keeper, that there's a theme, but yet there isn't a theme. It's something that anyone can be drawn into. What's going to be next?
You know, people always say, what's your favorite? Well, right now this one's my favorite because it's coming out, but there's such a sweet story behind it. And, you know, it's Natalie's daughter,
Melina. And the title again of this book?
It's called From Melina with Love. And it is, it makes my eyes water with tears and joy because it's so cute. So again, kids can go to our site and fill out the questions. Well, Melina kept going there, kept filling out the questions. And Nana's like, Courtney, I caught her again.
By about the fourth or fifth, we're like, okay, we need to do something about this. She's feeling unheard, unseen. We need to get in there.
It's sort of changing the pace. Maybe if you could read the opening of this. I mean, you're the illustrator, but this is about your daughter.
So from Milena with love. For anyone who brings color into the world. I was there the day love went away. I know it might be hard to believe this story is true, but I'm the one that brought love back and saved us all too. It happened on a Tuesday late last June when I woke up to absolutely no color in my room. The blinds were gray, the carpet was black, everything was drab. I blinked 1,000 times and pinched my cheeks. Where did the color go, and what happened to my sheet? I ran downstairs and threw open the door. I had to see if this colorless blob had affected the world. I couldn't believe the sights I was seeing. Flowers were ash, birds had gone flightless, and the sunbeams were beams of darkness.
I assume that Milena has read this. She's looked at the book and everything. Maybe share her initial reaction when she picked it up and started reading through it.
Well, my sweet little pixie is very extroverted, very confident, and will tell me what I need to fix and where I need to fix it. So she loved it, which, you know, didn't have a lot of criticism or critique, but was more in awe and kind of honored. And a couple details, you know, you'll see throughout where she felt a couple of the flowers should have a sad face, or she felt her hair should be in piggytails because that further showed her motion or what she was doing. But other than that, I got her seal of approval. But this one, it's tricky because, as you see, when she gets sad and sadness takes over, the color starts to leave. So the majority of the illustrations in this are done in black and white, and they were all painted in a grayscale. It's not that I put it in a computer and did that. So it really pushed me further, and it was new for her to see as well.
In this particular page, I froze with fear. Maybe you could read that, and then also if you could describe, as an artist, what someone would be looking at with regards to the actual illustration.
Well, this page says, I froze with fear. My heart went weak. As I sat down and cried, I began to see that when my heart was broken, my color started to leave. This is almost the climax, if you will, for me in the illustration process, because it's here when sadness wins for only a minute. But the color starts to leave her body. So from the lower, she's on her knees, kind of in a prayer position, if you will, hands facing her hands. And little by little, from her toes up, it's gray, black and white. And the color's slowly leaving a little bit left in her hands and cheeks. And it leaves out through the top of her head where, you know, the mind-body-soul connection.
If you do want to find out more about this wonderful series of books, the Nat and Corky series, you can go to natandcorky.com. And Nat is G-N-A-T, and it's and, A-N-D. And I just want to thank both Natalie Sorrentino, the incredible illustrator, and Courtney Kotlowski, the poet, the writer. I want to thank all of you for listening to this interview with Courtney Kotlowski and Natalie Sorrentino. For Education Matters here on WGTD HD, I'm your host, Steve Brown. Thank you so much for listening.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Archive programs are available on our website, WGTD.org, and you're invited to continue the discussion on the Education Matters Facebook page. This is WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that highlights various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Lenaya Quinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, and Laura Sumner Kuhn, a former journalist at the Racine Journal-Times, who currently serves as an adjunct instructor at UW Parkside. Community Matters shares its time slot with the WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's program.
Good morning. This is Lenaya Quinta for Community Matters, and our topic this morning is health equity in southeastern Wisconsin with a focus on fatherhood. My guests this morning are Charmaine Harris, the Father Involvement Program Coordinator for the Racine Kenosha Community Action Agency. He runs the Dedicated Dads Program. And also with us this morning is one of the fathers, Mr. Kyle Smith, and his one-year-old son is with him here. Good morning, fellas.
Good morning. Good morning. Thanks for having us.
We're talking about social determinants of health on the program lately. Those who are assiduous listeners to Community Matters may recall that we talked on August 3rd